Push the button, Frank.
That's right, so that I can say, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mac Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And we have an amazing panel today, just like we had an amazing panel yesterday on the big show. And the difference today is that it's Friday. So this is how I get to kick off the weekend. But other than that, it's just amazing people that are clearly here to entertain me. So I do appreciate that. Dave, how are you doing?
Doing great. It's a holiday weekend in the United States with Labor Day coming up on Monday and looking forward to it and enjoying some time off. Got to work from home today, so I'm here as well. And let's dig into a good topic.
Awesome. Speaking of good topics, Chuck, how are you?
I'm good, Jeff. It's Labor Day weekend, and I'm planning on laboring at least part of the weekend, if not most of the weekend. So it just seems to be, you know, what you would expect. Other than that, it's good.
All right, confession time. I just learned it's would you say Labor Day, Memorial Day weekend? Which weekend?
Labor Day.
Labor Day. It's Labor Day weekend. I had no idea. Well, at least now I do. Thank you for that, Chuck.
Hey, it's in other news, Jeff, you know, it's 2025.
So, funny story about that. I realized a couple of days ago that when I've been in like text message conversations with friends about the new version of iOS and macOS that are coming out September, October, somewhere along the way, I started referring to them as iOS and macOS 24. Yeah.
That was last year's version. Actually, it was 2 years
ago. 2 years ago version, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, bless my heart. I'd say the best I can do is get by in life on my looks, but I'm kind of screwed.
Yeah.
Marty.
Uh-huh. I disagree.
Well, thank you. And Marty, how are you?
It's a Labor Day weekend, which means I'm going to labor all weekend. I've got projects I can catch up on. I won't be pestered by emails from the school and the administration. I do have a project today that I have to get done, which is a 1,000-word bio of myself. I was a past president for an association. They're putting all these bios together of past presidents. And for the first time in my life, I realized they don't know anything about me, so I can be anybody I want to be. So
nice.
And since I really don't care, I can create a whole backstory of me that just is what I want.
So let me think about that. What's your backstory? You're a rich billionaire. You're very good with technology, and you fight crime at night, right? That sounds about right.
I would go with the last two, not the first one.
Okay.
I don't think anybody would see me as a rich billionaire.
I thought you were Batman.
Who was it that
I see the resemblance?
Yeah, totally, 100%.
I'm Batman.
who was it that? I can't think of his name. But the game show host that allegedly was also an assassin for the CIA.
Chuck Berry, the Gong
Chuck,
Show.
Chuck Barris.
Chuck Barris.
Barris.
Chuck Barris.
Chuck Barris.
Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry. I got us most of the way there. You had to take the leap at the end on
Johnny
your own.
Be Dead.
Yeah. Oh.
Wait, yeah, so Chuck, you're a game show host on the side?
No, I'm working with Marty to try to, you know, create his backstory.
Come up with a backstory for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Patrice, you were so close. By day, Chuck operates under the guise of a high-level insurance executive.
Okay.
But by night, he is a CIA agent, master assassin, master spy.
Mm-hmm. Sounds about right.
You know, we had Batman deliver a graduation address at our university.
That's brilliant.
That's
amazing.
I mean, he probably said only like six words or something, but yeah.
He was drunk. He was snockered. You could tell.
Is there video anywhere of it?
I will look for it and try and post it to the chat.
So which Batman was it?
Michael, what's his name?
Michael Keaton.
Yep.
Wow.
Nice.
He came? Wow.
Yeah, I don't know what the connection was.
Oh, wait a minute.
He probably got free booze. That's what the connection was.
I misunderstood. You mean Michael Keaton gave it? I thought you meant somebody came as Batman.
No.
That would have been fun.
Oh, well, that would have been so much better. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the best Batman, like if you had someone that was going to show up and do the whole presentation, the whole speech as Batman, it would have been Burt Convoy.
Burt Ward.
Well, I mean, he would have to take over the mantle, but Burt Ward would probably be pretty good.
I mean, Burt Convy.
Burt Convy?
Burt Convy.
He was a voice actor. Oh, no. Burt Conroy. He was a voice actor, and he passed away a few years ago. But he did the animated Batman, and so when people hear like audio Batman quotes where it's like, oh my god, that is so good, they're probably the Burt Conroy recordings, like the whole thing about I am the night, I am vengeance, and all of that. that's a Burt Conroy thing.
Yeah. So just to establish this, so we have here on screen, we have a CIA assassin, a crime fighter Batman, we have the guy who did Mythbusters, so how about you, Dave?
I don't know.
You're probably like a hacker or something, like you hacked the Pentagon like back in the 80s already.
Yeah.
And
I'll go with that.
Okay, so before
you wanted
I
to
get
play
sued,
a game, right?
Before I get sued, I just did a search on this. There is no credible. Let me do it in Batman's voice. There's no credible information or news report to support the claim that Michael Keaton was drunk at Kent State University.
And we're sticking to that story.
Yeah, we're sticking to that story. Here's the video.
Oh my god.
Was it on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Oh my god. Put it in the chat?
It's in the chat. It's in that chat. And I'll put it in the live stream.
Yes, I'm sure everyone in the live stream is champing at the bit for this one.
Yes.
And Kevin and Conroy.
Kevin Conroy.
Thank you, Chuck.
Yeah, is Burt Conroy and Chuck Berry versus Kevin Conroy.
It was long before he was Batman, it says here in this.
Oh, that guy. Yeah, okay. I remember him.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, look at Michael Keaton walking along there like he's probably thinking, finally, I'm going to get a degree. It's free. All I had to do was talk in front of a group. But finally, I get a degree. I have no idea if Michael Keaton has a degree in anything. No idea at all.
No idea.
So, anyhow, as long as we're here, Patrice.
Hi.
How are you? Welcome back.
Hi, I'm back. Yeah.
Welcome back.
Yeah, I'm short stop in Vienna. Like, I was in Cologne this week. I had some really cool food. and met some nice people. I had something called cologne cocaine. It's like it's an espresso martini with some ice cream.
Oh, okay.
So it was really good.
now I get the whole reference of super addictive.
Yes. Yeah, it definitely is. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, so, no, big. And I'm leaving tomorrow on Sunday already again. So.
You're just a traveling warrior.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Well, glad you're back.
Yes.
Well, we've made it this far into the show. We should probably remind people Summer of Fun is still happening.
Mm-hmm.
And our topic today...
we've already forgotten about.
Hold on. something about website services,
Web publishing tools.
Web publishing.
That we've used.
The things we used, the things we know, the things mm-hmm. that are gone.
Yes.
Well, the evolution. Of it.
Or the evolution. Thank you.
Okay. What was the Microsoft thing called?
Front page.
Ah, front page. Yeah, that's what. That's page. One of the things I started with. Like, I remember that in school somewhere.
A lot of people started with front page.
Yeah, I mean, I was like 10 maybe or 11. Something like that.
Yeah, I know people that were using it as a professional...
Okay.
Excuse me, a professional website design tool.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the time, there were other tools, but it was the tool that was accessible to them.
Yeah.
I used it to work for a time, early 2000s.
That's already pretty late, early 2000s. But it was like late, somewhere in the 90s, like mid to late 90s, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I never used it myself. But the stories that people have told me about how they were trying to use it mm-hmm. like in a professional environment.
mm-hmm.
Just like a Microsoft publisher.
Yeah. Oh my God.
No.
side path here. Microsoft publisher.
The most incompatible
system. I spent a lot of time. Oh, it's horrible. So no secret, for a long time, I worked in printing and publishing. And we would periodically get Microsoft Publisher files in, and we made sure that all of the customers, all the clients knew Microsoft Publisher files are not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Yet people would send them.
Of course.
And then mm-hmm. and then expect us to be able to actually print these these files. And it was awful. The customers typically would end up having to pay extra because we would use what they had created as a guideline so we could recreate the entire document in at the time Quark Express. But people were all pissed off. Like, I did all this hard work so that I don't have to pay you for it. And yeah, those were often the same people that would send documents for Offset Press
mm-hmm.
that they had created in Excel.
Oh yeah, like, yeah. Like I've had people like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but that
they would make business cards, and like each cell would be a card.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
But Jeff, would that was pre PDF, was it not?
It was not pre PDF. Mm-hmm. PDF was already a thing.
PDF has been around for a long time.
Why in the world wouldn't they export it? It seems so obvious now, but maybe their options weren't there to export to PDF. But why would you not?
Well, it wouldn't have mattered anyhow, because the PDF that you would get out of Publisher wasn't something that you could do like spot color separations.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And in most cases, these were documents that needed to go Offset Press. If it was something that that could run digitally, you know, like on a DocuTech or something like that,
mm-hmm.
Then you could use them in some cases. But still, the output would be kind of wonky.
from a
publisher.
I remember taking stuff to an offset printer. They were very particular, usually, in what formats you could provide it, because it had to be printed somehow. So, and you wanted it to be printed correctly and not have complete crap at the end.
Right. I mean, offset printing, well, printing in general, it's not cheap.
Nope.
And if you're paying for it, you want it to be right.
Yeah.
And of course, the printer, the printing company, they want it to be right, too.
Mm-hmm.
So publisher was not an option.
No.
PageMaker was difficult, but we called it RageMaker or
PageMaker. Yes. Yeah, I mean, I published tons of like school newspapers and yearbooks and whatever in PageMaker.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we had.
Yep. It's what you had, and it worked.
What was my wife's uncle who was a school teacher for many years, and he's not the sharpest pencil. I'll tell you that for as far as technology goes, he like loved PageMaker, and it's all he would ever use. And I'm like, why are you still using this? It was pretty much near its end when he was still using it, and then I said, you know, what do you need to change this if you want to continue to do it? I didn't even know why he was using it. He wasn't doing anything that what PageMaker can even do. I mean, it's like probably a small portion of what it can do.
I knew many people in the academic world that swore by PageMaker. They just loved it. All right, Dave. So here's a side story for you. I've completely taken us off topic.
That's what we're here for.
Yeah. So. Well, this is a fine topic anyway, Jeff.
The whole PageMaker thing. You know, the problem was that Quark Express was superior to Aldus PageMaker.
Mm-hmm.
After Quark Express came out and started to mature a little bit, there were really good reasons to switch from Aldus PageMaker over to Quark Express.
Wasn't it Adobe PageMaker at some point? Because I remember it was Adobe PageMaker. That's what we used, Adobe PageMaker, and then we switched to InDesign at some point.
InDesign. So here's how that played out. InDesign
is the current product. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Aldus, later Macromedia. Mm-hmm. PageMaker.
Oh yeah, Macromedia.
They knew that the PageMaker code base was hitting a wall, and so they started working on a new publishing product that was going to set them up long term for the future. And it was this whole modular design where you have the basic framework of your print publishing tool.
Yeah.
And then it's modules that plug in. So like extensions.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever functionality you need for your specific use case, you just get the modules for that, which can be from the company or from third party developers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a completely tailored print publishing system for your needs. Brilliant idea. And Adobe really wanted to compete with Quark Express. So this product was going to be the new version of PageMaker.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, they decided to call it InDesign. So InDesign is the progression of PageMaker. And so Adobe bought Macromedia. They got all the stuff. They get they end up with PageMaker. They end up with all of the assets that are going to become InDesign. So while they finished fleshing out InDesign so that it could be released, they continued to sell PageMaker. And at that point, it was Adobe PageMaker.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it was interesting. And when InDesign 1.0 came out, it was unusable.
Not a surprise. I mean,
it was...
Surprise, so, Adobe.
Yeah. But I checked up on it. So PageMaker 1.0 was released in 1985. The version 6 that then was, I think, under the Adobe, 6.0 was the first one with Adobe. It was 1995, so 10 years later. And 1999 was the first version of InDesign.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm trying to remember what the program I used to use was, because PageMaker was too expensive for what I was doing at that time. And so I just asked ChatGPT to give me a list. And there was one that I used, and the one that it's sort of ringing a little bit of a bell called Newsroom from Springboard Software, but I don't think that was it. Mm. There was something else.
Yeah, there was definitely a competitor I'm thinking about. What was it?
For web, for publishing or for web design?
For publishing.
And so what else is on the list, Chuck?
Adobe's Apple 2-page layout. Oh, no, that's the title. The Print Shop, Newsroom.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Publisher. Print Shop, oh, my God.
Yeah, Springboard Publisher, Printmaster, Home Publisher, Newsmaker. What was Newsmaker? Beagle Brothers. Maybe that was it. The Newsroom Companion, Publishing Partner, and Newsletter Publisher. Other quasi-publishing tools on the Apple II Plus were Bank Street Writer, Apple Works with Print Shop Publish It plugins, and the Graphic Shop.
Oh, good old Apple Works.
Yeah, back when you could get a database program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unlike now, if you want to do proper databases, you do cloud services.
Yeah, I didn't use a lot of these tools for a long time, but I got familiar with them because I had to somewhat support them. So you Jeff, would being in publishing and doing that design was more into it than I was. I was just thinking of another one for web design, Dreamweaver. I mean, that's another one that was very popular in the day. Now it's kind of, and surprisingly enough, Adobe still has it in Creative Cloud, but it's like a very niche product now. Hardly anybody uses it anymore.
Yeah, I wound up taking a workshop at the university on Dreamweaver because it was a new product. It was Macromedia, and Adobe, was ready to purchase that with Flash, Fireworks, and Director were all part of the Macromedia products that Adobe.
So
but I took a 2-day workshop on Dreamweaver and did some, development in Dreamweaver. Prior to that, Front Page was the place I went. But even prior to that, the best thing was just getting the HTML source from some other page that you like and just redesigning it from the HTML source.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, that's what I did with the, what was the Microsoft thing, Front Page thing? I think. Mm-hmm. That's what I did. I used the Front Page thing and then I started changing it because I at that point, I think like 1997, 1998, I learned HTML. Three or four.
Right.
And I learned that, and then I was like, okay, and I started throwing out all the crap that it was doing and doing it properly and so on.
You know how I figured out HTML? I had one of those Selectric typewriters that you could press key combinations and it would give you the on-off bold sort of things. And it was using a lot of the same language that HTML was. So when I first started looking at source code, it's sort of like, well, this is like my typewriter. And then just did some searching and found out the stuff that I needed to do it. And so it was really kind of a backdoor way to get into it.
Well, if you go back before Dreamweaver, I used Go Live Cyber Studio.
And that
was such a great program, and then Adobe picked it up and completely destroyed it and then decided to cancel it in favor of Dreamweaver. And the code that Dreamweaver would spit out was horrible.
It was horrible. Go Live Cyber Studio, man, Chuck, I used that so much back in the day. And it was so sophisticated that it can even do this new thing we were just starting to learn about called CSS. And to this day, I do not think there has been a product in the website design space that has come close to what Go Live Cyber Studio was.
Jeff, it's one of those things I don't want to sound like make us sound old, but I kind of feel like the same way, because the one thing that Cyber Studio did was it was true to WYSIWYG. What you saw was what you get. And even today, with trying to edit some of the WYSIWYG tools inside like WordPress or whatever, you don't quite get exactly what it is. You got to play with it. And I don't know why that is so hard, or you know, what they were doing right that nobody seems to have done right since then.
Hmm. Quick question. The application you were looking for, was it the Coral application? Because that's the one I was thinking about.
No.
Because they, I think they had also that. One, Coral Ventura, I think it was called.
Yeah, that's not, no, that's okay. Not it. If we say it, it'll yeah. come back, but right now it's not there yet. But yeah, in fact, this is sort of what, why this idea came up is, you know, all the things we're talking about were relatively primitive compared to what we have now. Mm-hmm. Now we have services where you can log on and basically it'll build the website for mm-hmm. you almost.
Yeah.
You know, so, but in the old day, and yeah, the old days when we all started, you know, you had to have at least some back end knowledge if you wanted to get what you wanted to get.
Mm-hmm. At least some HTML knowledge you needed, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Back in the day.
Chuck, I'm glad you brought up Go Live Cyber Studio.
That sounds like a video game.
It does. And in some ways, it was almost like playing a video game. Like some of the animations for the interface, like if you wanted to link from one thing to another, there's this little button that you would click on, and it looks sort of like a coil spring. And so you click and drag on the button and then drag it to the thing that it's supposed to link to, mm-hmm. and the spring would uncoil and follow your mouse cursor along, and then when it connects to the thing that's supposed to link to, then it would like snap back, and you know, it's just these little details like that they just nailed. But it for the time, it wrote good code.
Yeah. There's. Do you remember the Glenn Fleischman's book on Go Live?
Oh, Jeff? Yeah.
Go Fish.
And you remember?
I forgot about that.
Yeah, he wrote a voluminous book. I mean, it was like this.
I think I owned it.
Oh, I know I owned it. Yeah. And so eventually, you know, as Go Live was theoretically kind of sunsetting, not of its own accord.
No longer going live?
He put it out as a PDF, thinking that, you know, okay, as a free PDF, mm-hmm. and hosted it on his website, thinking, well, there aren't going to be that many people. And I'm afraid I will exaggerate it, but he ended up with a bill from his provider in like the thousands of dollars because of all the people that downloaded it and had to negotiate something.
Right. This sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. It was like thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it was more than any of us would want to pay, because mm-hmm. you know he figured it was, you know, not going to be relevant, nobody. So why not? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and surprise, there were a lot of people that really loved that program, mm-hmm. and used it until you couldn't get it to work anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, you can't beat free. So.
Yeah. Well, that's right. There is that.
Well, and a quality Glenn Fleischman book for free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even if they had no interest in the product, like.
It's a Glenn book. Of course you get it.
Yeah. Very cool.
But we were talking pre-show about iWeb, Apple's mm-hmm. entry into that space. And you know, that was one. I think I built a couple iWeb sites, but nothing. You know, at that point I was still doing Go Live, and iWeb seemed, it was great for being approachable, but it wasn't terribly sophisticated.
It wasn't, but it was super approachable. And even though I was using Go Live, there were several sites that I built with iWeb, because you could spin something up really fast, and it integrated so well with iTools, where you could host your own website. It was easy to help someone get set up with their web page and have it look like really nice. And they didn't have to understand any of the back end part, because it was just a matter of you click the publish button and your website uploads, mm-hmm. and that was it. I thought it was a great tool. Not something that I was going to design a website that I was being paid to make, but yeah, and I, for example, I'd be speaking at some event and needed a little web page to go with it. Instead of doing it in Cyber Studio, I'd spend 15 minutes, build something in iWeb that looked nice, hit publish and walk away. I was done.
I'll be honest, like I wasn't aware of the Mac until mid 2000s, I want to say. So I didn't even hear about iWeb until it was basically didn't exist anymore. Don't even know when they decommissioned it or like sunsetted it.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's see. iWeb 11 was released on October 20th, 2010 as part of the iLife 11 suite. But it had not been updated from the previous release, which would have been iLife 06, I guess. Yeah, so I guess when that version came out, the writing was on the wall, because we get it, but it was the only thing that wasn't updated. And then, so I'm getting this from the Wikipedia page.
Mm-hmm.
Development for iWeb stopped in 2011.
That's interesting. I mean, it came out only in 2006, and I bought my first MacBook in 2007. So I'm kind of surprised I didn't hear about this. Maybe at that point I didn't care about it anymore.
Yeah, it could be.
I mean, but that's a good question. I mean, maybe, like, what's your opinion? Was that maybe too late anyway?
I don't know. Maybe it's... For the average person who wanted to make a web page, this is much more approachable than front page.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also 10 years later or something. So, but they were, I mean, at that point, there were already some like web tools you could use for that.
Yeah, what was the... not Rapid Weaver. Maybe it was Rapid Weaver.
Yeah, Rapid Weaver was definitely one, I think.
Okay.
And Rapid Weaver is still out there.
Yeah, just saying. I mean, WordPress, for example, was released in 2003. Right? So, yes, it was not as easy to set up back then. Today, I mean, you could just go to WordPress.com and sign up for it.
Mm-hmm.
But it existed already. And I'm sure if I looked like... A lot of the other CMSs like Drupal and what's it called, Typo3, I think.
TypePad. That's the fact that they're shutting down the end of September is sort of the genesis of this discussion. Because I remember working with Steve Sandy and trying to build a new website for Mac Voices, and you know, it's like, okay, do we do TypePad? Do we do Joomla? Do we do WordPress?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Joomla.
Because Right. That at that time, there was WordPress was not the dominant force that it is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just checked. Drupal came out 2001. Typo3, which is another CMS, 1998. So it's been a while.
So Joomla is celebrating their 20-year anniversary.
Which means 2005. So that kind of my point, like with the 2006 release of iWeb, I mean, yeah, maybe it was, I mean, that was the idea, right? To have it be for the average person who can't run their own CMS or doesn't need to run their own CMS. But I'm kind of wondering if that was anyway a little bit late.
It may have been.
Rapid Weaver came out in 2004. And I did some searching on it. I became a big Rapid Weaver user.
Mm-hmm.
The frustrating part was for me, a lot of the stuff that I did with web would change like I was developing webs for conferences and webs for associations, and then I'd go to a conference and something needed to be changed on it. And the files and the file system saving with a Rapid Weaver has always been complicated in terms of being able to use it through cloud services. And so I continued to use it. And that was when I was more invested in, I got to do this. I got to have this hands on site. I've got to create it. I've got to build it. And part of that was the reputation I developed in the profession that I was in. And that became less important in my life. And it's like, there are simpler ways for me to throw together a web page if I want to throw together a web page. So I've kind of dropped using Rapid Weaver. Yeah. But long time investment in it. Lots of templates that won't be used again.
And it's still out there. There was another one that just popped up in my search that I'd kind of forgotten about because I know I interviewed the developer, Everweb.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, sort of leveraged the whole Apple's, you know, Apple's metaphors and that feel. And it's still out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you want to play around with creating websites on your Mac and not having to sign up for these services necessarily until you're ready, you know, but now it's just... With no disrespect intended, they're great tools, but there are other tools out there now online that are just frankly easier.
Chuck, you're gonna love this. I actually just went to LinkedIn, looked up Ian Schrey, because I was trying to remember the web product that he was a marketing person for. So I had to go through Ian's job listings and then found it. Freeway.
Good for you, Jeff. Good for you. I forgot all about Freeway.
I mean I had forgotten about it, but I at the same time remembered it, and I remember Ian being part of the company, and then it's like, oh crap, what is this app? Because it was good.
Yes.
And I remember having a discussion with Ian at one point about what I thought would make Freeway the killer web design app for the Mac. And it's if you could design a Freeway thing and then export it as a WordPress site. And at the time, what would have been great is if at the time parent and child themes had been supported, because if that's the case, they could have exported as a child theme, and it would have been amazing, but that wasn't. So, you know, they would have to write out everything to go to all the various locations in a single theme. So, Freeway.
So I'm going to throw this in the chat. If you look up softpress.com/legacy, it lists Freeway, and there's a big notice. Freeway will not run on recent versions of Mac OS, and explains why. But they have a new product called X-Way that looks like it is. This looks very familiar to anybody that used Freeway or some of these other programs. Now I've completely lost where my chat window is.
It's okay. I've already put the Soft Press Freeway link in. So okay, I'll go ahead and drop the X-Way link for you too.
There, I just threw it in. Yeah. Okay, so there's the X-Way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what's interesting? It's like how much WordPress has taken over. I mean, I think if they're doing like 60% of the web or something, or 50 or something, but it's a large percentage.
Yeah.
And the sad thing is, Patrice, that you know any of these programs that we've been talking about, if they'd been handled right, they could have been the dominant force.
Because they were
so far ahead of WordPress when they started, and they just didn't evolve.
I think a lot of them were overly complicated. I mean, I remember Joomla, I remember Drupal, I remember a bunch of others that I've tried. They were always very complicated to use, and the WordPress thing, I mean, I think with being open source did help. There were a lot of good people that thought about it, but I mean, it is that simple to use, even to this day. I mean, it is infinitely more complex today than it was back when it was introduced.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah, it's well, yeah. You can't just spin up a Joomla site.
Mm-hmm. No, you can. You can, but it's super complicated.
Yeah. But you can just spin up a WordPress site.
Yeah, I do that all the time. Unfortunately, yeah. I would like to go away from it, but I'm like, I haven't found anything that is as good for like doing podcasts with other people. I mean, heck, yeah, no, British Tech Network runs on it. Retro Rewatch runs on it. Like, it's self-hosted, but it's WordPress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the fact that it's open source.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if everything goes completely sideways with WordPress as it is today, someone can take a fork and run with it, and and keep it alive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's going to have to happen, but it can.
It probably already happened. It just didn't stick.
Well, there's forks all the time, so yeah, exactly. You're right.
Yeah, and there's so many plugins and customization mm-hmm. options.
Yeah.
But that too is a double-edged sword because there was a plugin I had for my old site
mm-hmm.
that I dearly loved, and when we moved to the new one, it was no longer supported
mm-hmm.
by the current versions of WordPress, and I have yet to find anybody that duplicated some of the functionality of that.
Mm.
And it's, you know, and so that part can be really frustrating. And it feels like there's a larger message here that for any of these programs, you know, you have to be flexible and be able to move on when the time comes.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. the plugins also have their risks on the security side, like that on top of it. The one thing I'm kind of annoyed by these days is most plugins these days are like professional pro plugins. Like it's basically impossible to find even a basic functionality from a plugin these days for certain topics. Like I had that recently, we wanted to move all our BTN show files to an S3 storage. Which is not as easy. I mean, the files are easy, but like the whole WordPress links and whatever. There is no plugin that does that. There's a million plugins that will do it for money. And it's not like a buck or two or five, because it's a one-time thing where I'm like, okay, I'll pay that. So I'm like, sorry, no. I found a different way to do it. But like that was mm-hmm. because I have the development skills to do it. So as I said, that's...
Yeah, but Patrice, isn't that the way that everything is? I mean, look, let's just face it. You know, when we all started, we were hacking around and, you know, messing around, and we wanted to do this stuff. And now the whole thing has turned into a big business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's, I mean, that feels like a natural evolution, because if it hadn't, we wouldn't have a lot of the tools we have now.
I'm not so sure. I think there is a different... I don't know if it says something about the developer community, how it has changed, or whether the community has just moved on, because a lot of people have moved on to other tools. Like the developers don't particularly, I think a lot of them don't particularly like WordPress anymore.
Yeah. That's a whole podcast discussion on its own.
Yeah, but that then like leads into what you said, Jeff, where the plugins are kind of, or I think, no, Chuck, it was you, the plugins are outdated and are not supported anymore because the developers moved on. And the commercial ones, I mean, they stick around because hopefully at least they get paid for it, which is fine. Like I'm not a problem, but sometimes I'm like, I don't know if every plugin has to have a subscription.
With that, Patrice, I'm right there with you on that. I mean, I think the subscription model thing done right is appropriate and fine, and I absolutely endorse it. And there are others that, and we aren't going to get into slagging anybody here mm-hmm. as much as I want to, but you know, some of this is just, it's completely out of control.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that, so, that you want me to subscribe to, and I'm going to use this like once every 3 months. No.
Or once at all, but you need a 1 year, 2 year subscription for it.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly. Yes. Just put the price on the thing and let me pay. Mm-hmm. Let me decide whether I'm going to pay it or not, but don't play with me and then hope that I forget and the subscription automatically renews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we've all had that, and there's nothing I hate more than getting, oh, we just renewed your subscription. Yeah, with no warning. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, that's bad on me.
Yeah, the first thing you get is the charge on your credit card, and then you get the notification. Hey, we just did it. Here's your invoice.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's the downside of subscriptions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but it's just interesting how much WordPress has basically taken over the web. It's not that there is no competition. There is services out there like Squarespace and so on that do, I think, reasonably well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I dipped into WordPress a couple of times and did not find it intuitive at all. Rather confusing in terms of design, even with templates. That I had purchased. So I've been off of WordPress for a while. I was doing Weebly and paying for sites through Weebly. And I love that kind of drop and drag, put the box in here, drop it. Because I got away from that. Yeah, I got away from the flying butterflies. I remember one design I did had
blinking
was for a conference at the beach, and I did all of the little lines so the butterfly would fly around. We don't need that anymore. We just need a place to disseminate information. So my Weebly sites are more like that, but Squarespace bought them and kind of ruined the setup. Now it's all about enterprise, and I have to go through Squarespace if I want to start another page. And I don't want all that crap. I just want a website that I can throw stuff up, not for sale, and not, you know. So every time I feel I need to do a new web page and it has to go through, I'm going to do it through Weebly. I struggle through this whole Squarespace setup.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. Weebly, it's it became a thing where it's about like your company, not about individuals.
But you know, Marty, you bring up an interesting thing because I guess maybe because I got burned early, and not too badly, just bad enough to leave a little bit of a scar, that I became very aware of the need to be able to export things out.
Oh yeah.
And you know, and so you could take your data with you and move it into something else. And that is something that WordPress seems to do fairly well. Because I built a Squarespace site for a company I used to work for, and they're still using it. And it's great. But trying to export that out, no. I made that mistake, and you know, I had to redo a whole lot of things.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a freeway thing where you could point it at a website like Squarespace and it knew how to import it? Or was that a Go Live thing?
I think there were a bunch of services like that.
I think there were a bunch of services, and not most of them didn't work very well.
Okay.
And I won't say, I don't know if that's freeways or not, but yeah, there were a lot of them that say, oh yeah, just do this and pull it in. And it's like what came in is not what, it was not seamless by any means. Maybe the data was there, but the design was terrible.
Yeah. And you know, well, and in a lot of cases, the thing is you need to get the data and then you can fix the design, but you need to make it very clear that what you're importing is not going to be an exact replication of what you started with.
Yeah.
I mean, unless Dave's doing it, because Dave can do anything.
I don't know about that. I'll jump in here. I mean,
my website's... He'll put it in front page.
No, I will not. Never. No, I'm using Divi from Elegant Themes. I mean, it's been working well for me. And there's so many of those types of themes out there. Mm-hmm. I paid for a lifetime subscription to it, which is fine. It's very creative, very, very flexible, and got a little bit of a learning curve, but I've learned as I go. I mean, I go back to history when I was working at a law firm, and that was 1999, 1998, and I had no clue how to design a website, and she wanted one, and I did it, and it was all HTML, and I think I was using Real Player to play her videos, if you remember that.
Real Player, oh my
God. Yes. Yep.
Oh. Because she was a personal injury attorney, so she would create these videos for being shown on local TV. So she wanted to play it on her website. So I did all that without any help, and I had no idea what I was doing, but I did it, and it came out, and it turned out really good. Considering, I mean, you look at her website now; it's totally different from back in those days. But those are the kind of things what I did when I learned these things, and that I'm sure many of you have as well. It just everything self-taught, understanding. Some go to school. I mean, but that's how I've done it, and then I'm successful only because of that reason.
Mm-hmm. No, I never learned any of that in school. Like I was always self-taught.
Yeah.
I mean, other than WordPress, I moved on from any of them. Like for years I used Jekyll, which is like a static site generator. I think Brett Terpstra introduced me to that one. And that was cool. I mean, that's definitely you need at least a little bit development experience, or at least you can run some tools, and you definitely do need some Markdown and HTML and CSS. Like, I mean, there's templates, and if you don't change them, you can just run with it and it's fine. But if you want to change something, it's HTML, CSS. So you had to know that. And like, I don't know, 5, 7, 8 years, something, I switched to Hugo, which is a Go based solution, very similar, does the same thing, but it's much easier. Hugo.
Hugo.
Hugo.org, I think, or .com.
It's with an H or a J?
Hugo. Hugo.
Oh, Hugo. Okay.
Yes. And it's Go based. Jekyll was Ruby, or Rails, I think. Yes, I think it's Ruby. I moved on from that, and like everything that I can that I'm not working with someone else, like with for Red Rewatch with Jeff, I use that, and I just built a static HTML page out of it, maybe with some JavaScript if there is something that I really want, like flexible or like animated or whatever I want to do. But mostly it's like static page, and I just render it, and I can throw it anywhere. So that's kind of been my solution. So kind of back to the roots in a sense, right? To say, I don't need PHP and rendering everything at runtime and all of that. Like a plain HTML page with some CSS, that's the job. Like you can do podcasts with it very easily.
Yeah, I think generationally we've gotten away from the, I think, remember going back to Flash animation. Everybody had to figure out how to put Flash animation.
Oh, you have to install Flash to view this website.
For what reason, you know? Yes. Was there any educational or informational piece that was coming from that? In most cases, no. It was just stuff. And I think we've got, I'm glad we've moved away from that, and we're more into minimalist. Let me get the information I need to get and let me get out.
Yeah.
And if you make it look pretty, that's fine too. But frankly,
it was so bad with Flash. Oh, yeah.
There was one thing with Flash that was maybe good. There were Flash videos, like literally like videos that people animated things. That was actually, and some games, I think. That was fun. Websites, entire websites with like whatever and crazy animations or whatever, no, useless. Like, don't need that.
Go ahead, Marty.
Yeah, I was teaching international teachers about web design and how to use web products. And all of them were like, but I want to do this. And all of it was Flash animation. And as teachers, I'm like, what do students learn from that? And they were, you know, because that was the hot thing. It looked flashy. It looked good. They thought that was going to necessarily improve learning. So.
Yeah.
Jeff, help me out. Because I went to work for a company and they knew that I had some tech skills, which was not why they hired me. And they had a website that was, it was one of those that it was a really pretty image that had been sliced up and uploaded. And, you know, then hot, and I can't remember the terminology. And it was such a scam because if you wanted to change anything in the menu structure or anything, you basically had to redo everything and re-upload it. And
yes, I remember that.
And the other thing was that the whole website was brown because the boss was colorblind. And so he didn't know that it looked terrible, but it was, you know, it's like, well, yeah, we need to add this page. We just need to change this menu item, which would take any of us right now about 30 seconds, if that. And it basically required redoing the whole site and therefore rebilling to redo the whole site.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've often wondered I've wondered, and you were there at that point. So I've often wondered if that was one of those things where the print people were trying to take themselves out to the web and leverage their skills because they knew how to build something that was pretty on a paper. And this was a way of putting that up on the web.
There's always been that part of it. But if I'm remembering correctly, the whole thing with image slicing, which was a thing you could manually do in Adobe's products if you wanted to. It was ridiculous. But the idea was you can upload a bunch of smaller images faster than the whole image. And so you could have bigger images. And if you did it right, with air quotes, you could do it where you would need to only like reload part of an image. Like if there's going to be a drop down menu, that's in one of your slices. And so you don't actually literally have a drop down menu like you would now. It'd be a graphic and you just replace that one part of the image and now it's much faster. But the reality was it sucked ass. And it was an absolute pain.
That's how you really feel.
I'm kind of torn. And Chuck, you're right. You have one small change, and it wasn't, let's just update the thing. It's, we have to re-upload the entire website because this one thing had to change.
Well, and this individual had designed it with like all these curlicues and, you know, lines down the side that if you tried to change the slice, you could never match up. And so
what
you had to go back to them and have them open that image and do the change you wanted and then re-upload everything. And it's like, this is just silly. You know, I mean, this guy's taking you guys he's laughing the whole way to the bank.
Yeah. And for a lot of people that were doing web design, it was the only way they could figure out how to make something work. Right. In some cases, it was the best option, but it was a feature that was used just horribly wrong.
Yeah. Image slicing was the phrase I was looking for. Thank you.
And you could do it in Go Live. It had a whole image slice tool.
If it did, I never used it, so.
Good for you.
Yeah. Well, we were all early days trying to figure it out. And I'm sure they felt like that was a viable option at the time. So, but probably it was the way it was being used as opposed to just the image slicing itself.
Oh, yeah, I think that's fair.
I mean, there's a difference there in intent and outcome. They were probably saying, hey, people are not going to have high bandwidth internet, and we want them to get these images as quickly as possible. So if we cut them up into smaller pieces, they'll deliver in a faster format. And that's just kind of, at this point, with what we have with bandwidth, is just archaic way of thinking.
Yeah. I mean, yes, that was definitely part of the logic. And there was some validity to that because, so many people were on dial-up.
That's true. I threw my all-time favorite Flash video in. The ultimate showdown of Ultimate Destiny. It's like 20, I think almost exactly 20 years old.
It still works.
Ultimate Showdown. It still works. Yeah. Destiny.
Yeah, it's like all the super. It's like a. It was a Flash animation. It's like all the superheroes, like and villains, kind of fighting against each other, and it's really funny.
The bad music too.
I totally really
bad
music. This.
Like, but that's the point. Like, it's not supposed to be high quality, really bad. It's just supposed to be crappy and funny.
Wow. I had completely forgotten about this. See, this makes the entire show worth it today. Just because you're bringing this video.
Yeah, go watch it. It's fun.
That is awesome. Yeah. Well, we can't top that, so we're just going to wrap it up now.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll start that by saying, hey, thank you to Odd Technologies for being our sponsor. They're making sure we have the hosting space that we need so we can have a place for fellas to live.
Mm-hmm.
Odd Technologies, for those of you that haven't been paying attention, they do all of the video and environmental monitoring for whatever your big project is. Mostly what they do is for the rail industry, but for construction, other sites too.
Yeah.
And so out of the UK, Odd Technologies, thank you for being here and sponsoring us. I will do the super fast version of the live chat. We have one. Patrice made it. It rocks. If you go to live.britishtechnetwork.com, you can be part of it. If you want to check it out later, you go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. Is that correct?
Yes.
Patrice has an awesome calendar.
I don't know. That after, I think, 10 years, you still have to ask that.
As I say on Retro Rewatch, at least I'm on brand.
That's true.
So, but anyhow, click on the date. Today is Friday, August 29th, and you're going to get to see the whole chat. We've been dumping a ton of links in there, which is why I wanted to make sure everyone knew the live chat is there. So you can go check out all the links we've been dropping in. Okay. Wow. Done. So now it's time to wrap up. And thank you to all of you for just being so fantastically awesome. You all rock. And it was kind of cool nerding out on some of the old design technology that that was part of my life for a very long time. And I will have to do some sort of probably drinking therapy because mm-hmm. of Front Page. So thank you for opening those wounds. Yeah. Hey, Dave, where can people find you?
Find me at InTouchWithIOS, InTouchWithIOS.com, YouTube channel, YouTube.com/InTouchWithIOS. I'm on Vision Profiles on Monday with Marty and Eric, as well as Tuesdays on Mac Voices Live with most of the gang here, Patrice when she wants to be up late at night. And Thursdays we record InTouchWithIOS, as well as Fridays here on the Mac Show. And you find me on social media, Blue Sky, Mastodon, DaveG65.
Awesome. And Chuck, where can people find you?
MacVoices.com. That's where you'll find a lot of interesting things going on over there. We publish the live shows segmented. The live show takes place on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern on YouTube.com/MacVoicesTV. But if you can't make it, the shows will show up in the feed eventually. And on socials, you can find me as at Chuck Joyner. Jeff, this was a lot of fun. Thank you.
It was a lot of fun. There's a certain subset of people that are absolutely nerding out with us on this one. And I love every one of those people. Yeah. Marty, where can people find you?
Gencius, Gencius, at both mastodon.social and Blue Sky. The stuff that I do, you can find at the website, thepodtalk.net, a Weebly website, by the way. Since we were talking about websites, Monday nights with Vision Profiles, Tuesdays with Mac Voices with the gang, and then Thursdays with In Touch with iOS, and Fridays when I can make it here, and I am playing hooky from work.
Awesome. I am here for you for playing hooky. I emotionally support this
Marty,
plan.
If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I can picture it. So Patrice, first, how did I do with my completely impromptu here's the live chat thing?
You're on brand.
I am on brand. That speaks volumes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. I'll take it. Where can people find you?
Well, every week here on the Big Show, on the Mac Show, Thursdays and Fridays. That's that. Next week, we have one more Summer of Fun episode on the Big Show. And then we're back to Keynote Poker, because there was, and we didn't talk about that today, or we talked about it in the pre-show, that was a Apple event announced for 9-9. So 9-9-9-9. That's German. No, I don't know. September 9th. Yes. Anyway, everything I'm doing on my Hugo website, static website, thepatrice.com, takes you there. And Jeff and I have a podcast called Retro Rewatch, where we rewatch retro TV shows, and Jeff gets the order wrong. So that's usually how that goes.
Yep.
And we will post probably tonight or tomorrow morning Legacy, Stargate SG-1 Season 3 Episode 4 that we talked about. So
Can't wait to see what we think about that episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, three doctors. That's what I'm going to say.
Yep, three doctors. Yep. Not what you're thinking, people. All right. Then for... Why does Ewan still let me do this?
We don't know either.
I wonder too.
That's fair. All right. So you can find me on the various social medias as Jay Gamut, and I'm active mostly now on Mastodon, Blue Sky, and PixelFed. Then for shows, Chuck lets me join in on Mac Voices Live on Tuesdays. Dave lets me join in Touch with iOS on Thursdays. For some reason, Ewan still lets me be the interim host on the Big Show on Thursdays and the Mac Show on Fridays. Then Brian Chaffin and I, we do the Context Machine. And as Patrice pointed out, we do Retro Rewatch. Everything tastes better in a Retro Rewatch mug.
It does.
It does.
This water is tasting really good.
Yeah.
And of course... Dave, just sure. Behind him somewhere. Yeah. It's like anything is in like our fridge.
He's at his desk. Yeah. I have it right here. Yeah. Always a prop ready to go.
Sure, it's water.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's the story I stick to.
On a Friday before a 3-day weekend, sure, it's water.
Sure. Yeah. Dave and I are both drinking water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Before we totally wrap up, I'm doing a shout out for yesterday's Big Show because it was a very special edition of the Big Show because my dad was the guest.
A.K.A. Lord Gamut.
Lord Gamut. Yes. And so my dad, he's very much into the vintage Lionel trains, and so he showed up, and he basically gave us an hour-long presentation on everything you'd want to know about the model trains and building layouts and technical stuff, and it was just super awesome to get to watch my dad just riff. He wasn't riffing. He's the most prepared anyone's ever been on the show ever. He had slides. He had video. He had notes. Wow. He had actual trains that are older than us that he held up, and it was a lot of fun. So, even if you're not into vintage model trains, check out the episode because it's a delight seeing just how happy my dad was to get to completely nerd out on a topic that he loves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's really nice to see situations where parents make their kids proud. And that's what it sounds like.
Right?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. This is the first time my dad has ever done a podcast ever. And you know, it's my dad. So if you ask him to do something, he wants to make sure he does it right. So when I asked him a week ago if he could do it, he started preparing a week ago.
Hmm.
And wanted me to come up to see him and mom and do a test to make sure that everything would connect right. And so of course I went up and we did that. And yeah.
So what you're saying is the podcast genes run in the family.
They do now.
I think they did before.
Yeah, well, he just didn't know he exactly. had the gene.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess the next show, the next new podcast in the world will probably be my dad talking about trains. I could see that being a thing mm-hmm. and happening.
Yeah.
I'll have to get him a better camera.
Yeah. Don't tempt me. I've come up with two new ideas. I'm gonna need an intervention.
Yeah, you're in the wrong group here.
I've intervention for years.
I think you're in the wrong group here for that.
Yeah, you are absolutely in the wrong group for that intervention.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Then I'm amongst
we're the
friends.
Enablers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. All right. Speaking of friends, hey, everyone that's watching and listening live, thank you for being here. Everyone that watches or listens to the show recordings later, thank you for being part of the BTN family as well. Speaking of family, Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thanks for making sure we have people for shows. Odd Technologies, thank you for being our sponsor. And with that, please, everyone come back next Thursday for the big show. As Patrice pointed out, next week on the Mac show, it's going to be Keynote Poker Day for Apple's event. And everyone have an awesome weekend, and we will see you next week.